COVID 19 update with the Bay Podcast.
Hey, everybody, it's me. I hope everybody's doing okay. I just need a little assistance. If somebody cares, I just need a nice sponge bath and a little rub-a-dubby.
All right, listeners, we have an emergency update regarding the Baltic retaliation. With me right now, I got Mike Ferrucci. Say what's up, Mike.
Hey, how you doing?
We also have Ken Sliviak. Say what's up, Ken.
What's up, everyone?
And John Van Ness. Say what's up, John.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
So really important news regarding the coronavirus and how it's going to affect the Baltic retaliation. We have news anchor Mike Ferrucci. Mike Ferrucci.
Unfortunately, we're going to have to cancel Baltic retaliation due to the coronavirus. Back to you, Liam.
All right. Yeah. Big news in Massachusetts now is that Baltic retaliation would fall within that quarantine period they want to have for the next 15 days, capping events indoors and outdoors at 10 or less people. So we're just going to err on the side of caution and cancel it. Unfortunately, there are no dates that we can make this up, so we're just going to cancel it outright, no postponing. Now, our bigger fear with this is that it's going to get worse before it gets better. So it may affect other things like the expo. John, do you want to comment on the expo at all?
Sure. I mean, as of now, we all plan on continuing on. I know Ian had some doubt, but, Dave from Zulu seems to be in still. And, if the government cooperates, we'll be a go.
Yeah, agreed. I actually just have guys, vendors emailing me. They still want to go, and they're asking me what's happening with it. I'm at the thought process of it's business as usual until we have to cancel it. And I think April, think about it, the expo is a month away to the day. So I think a lot can happen in a month. So hopefully it gets worse, it's going to be better by then. Roman brought up a good point. Roman brought up a good point during the podcast when we were talking about it, that we're about 2 weeks behind Italy, and Italy's gotten really bad. China has shown improvement in the cases popping up. So I'm hoping by the time all these events in April come around, we'll be on the up and up. But the reason why I really wanted to do this emergency update is, A, the podcast discussion about coronavirus is outdated. We recorded on Sunday. By the time Monday came around, all the information we talked about was already different. So I just delayed releasing the podcast. So with that said, yeah, we're going to cancel Baltic retaliation. We'll refund everybody their money. Don't worry about that. Just give us some time. There were about 40 people signed up, so it'll take a little bit of time to go through PayPal and send money back. But, I mean, I know it sucks that, a lot of guys wanted to wear their Russian kit and all that stuff, and it was really a good kickoff to the season. But I think it's just better safe than sorry. I know, like, my dad, he wants to go, but he's an older guy. You know, the boomers, they got to watch out, so.
Yeah, I think postponing indefinitely or a cancellation is really the only decision at this point. I mean, it would be way worse to go there and either A, have somebody, get sick via contact with somebody else, or B, it being canceled by law enforcement or something, being reported.
Yeah.
We're having that, and that's just a bad mark that we don't need.
Exactly. 100%. That's really, yeah. Yeah, at the end of the day, yeah, it's an event that's going to be fun, but it's not worth the trouble that may put us in. So worst case scenario, we cancel it outright. We have plenty of other events throughout the year. Maybe we'll find a date further into the spring, maybe early summer, that we can go back up to Tolcom and just do like a green versus tan, and guys can wear whatever they want. If they want to wear their Russian kit, they can wear their Russian kit, and we'll just do armbands or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So if no one else has anything to add, that's really it for the emergency update. And we will go back to our regularly scheduled podcast. Take care.
In 2017, a crack Namsoft unit formed a supergroup to create the most immersive Vietnam experience. These men promptly escaped from the normal pickup gameplay to the Milsim Underground. Today, still wanted by the community, they survive as producers of fortune. If you have interest, if no one else does it right, and if you can come correct, maybe you can join the Bay Team. Come on.
All right, listeners, this is episode 14 of the Bay Podcast. We got a whole roster of people on this episode, starting with CJ Sen. Say what's up, CJ.
What's going on, everyone?
Mike O'Donnell. Say what's up, Mike.
Morning, everybody.
We got John Van Ness.
Howdy, y'all.
Roman Kamensky.
Hey, hey, hey.
And back once more into the fray, Brian McKenna.
Howdy doody.
All right, so let's start talking with the event we just had yesterday as of the recording of this podcast, the Rur Pocket. Mike, you want to start us off?
Sure. Well, I thought it was a pretty good turnout for World War II that we've, normally these days World War II games are small. The day started out and, kind of like was strong, I would say, like through lunch. And then as, over time, it kind of like broke down in terms of organization. But I think overall it was a really fun day. And, I would say like a good like 60-70% of people were like looking pretty fucking on point. So, it's hard these days with the World War II events to get something. There's no immersive like reenactor level World War II events, and I know that me, you, and CJ talked about trying to up our game to that, so I think that's something that we should strive for in the future, is maybe bringing back that sort of immersive level World War II experience.
Yeah, it's tough. I really don't know if we're ever gonna get there with it, man.
It's too hard. There's too many different impressions, too many different people who want to do too many different things. Yep. And it's like, that's a whole nother community that we'd have to build from the ground up.
Yeah.
So what impressions did show up?
Well, the GIs, it was mostly infantry, not too many paratroopers. But it was mostly like, what would you guys say? Like, I saw a few Rangers out there. I was on the GI side, so I just saw all you guys as murder hobos.
Yeah. I mean, it was mostly infantry, basic infantry. I think Mike and I were the only ones really.
Yeah, we were the only paratroopers.
Yeah. We had the medical staff. They were pretty awesome.
Yeah.
And it was pretty good.
The Germans actually. I think we really had three different basic impressions. We had groups of impressions. We had the pioneers. So we had like a regular hair pioneers. We had a lot of SS, which looked the same. So they looked like they were like one SS unit. And then we had a couple of the Fallschirmjägers. But that was really it for the Germans. It wasn't too varied. So,
yeah, you guys actually. For the most part, look really fucking good.
Yeah.
I mean, the SS guys, say what you want about being a crazy fucker, but, they look good.
They did. Yeah, we had...
It was just Americans and Germans?
Right, there was one Russian. Zach Boylan was a Russian. He was a lonely Russian, Roman.
Yeah, sorry. Sorry, Zach.
But
there was no, like, the summer event. There was a Jap there. There was a Chinaman there. There was that's it. Just Germans and just Americans. But the one lost Red Army guy.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. But, you know,
Dent was a British paratrooper, and he looked really good, actually.
He was good. Yeah, he did look good.
Yeah. It was a nice kit.
I just talked to him earlier, and he's like, yo, when you're doing another event, like, you got to do like a market garden or something like that. So, I mean, there, I think there is a demand, and we are, if now I feel it was good that we branched out to Zulu. So we had like, we kind of bridged the gap between the GZA crowd that would be willing to drive out of the GZA area to like Zulu, and we got the Zulu crowd. So we kind of could build up to like a 60-person World War II event eventually, you know. That's how I look at it. I felt the event overall was our, and correct me if I'm wrong, guys, I think it was our smoothest running event all around, from the registration all the way through to the gameplay to the end. I think it just flowed really smooth.
I think so too, and I think it was part the fact that everybody there was a pretty experienced player.
Yeah, yeah.
And everybody there was like either, you know, nobody there was really like new to Zulu by too much, like just a few people, but they were all very used to World War II gaming, and it just really seemed to move well because everybody was just like kind of in their element.
I think so, yeah. Everyone was kind of like automatic. And just knew what to do. But still, I think we should build on that for SteelCog when we have triple the amount of people. And I think that's a takeaway.
That's when you just start losing brain cells.
I know.
Like,
I know. I know. But yeah, definitely I would fight for the fatherland again with those Germans. They were good. I mean, they kind of got what our overall mission and objectives were, where we were holding ground to a certain time, then falling back. Then we would counterattack and try to overrun, like, the allies. If you guys had, like, three allies in a town, we're like, all right, we're going to go, like, buttfuck these guys and just go hard on them, you know? Because at one point, we were outnumbered almost 2-1. So we kind of had to use that tactic of, like, staying together and pushing strong, like, and that's what I do. And like, you guys know how I am, even as like a commander, let alone the producer of the events, is I want everyone to stick together. And the Germans did. Like, we stayed, you know, every guy stayed in his little unit that we had. Like, you know, we had two SS squads, and then the Pioneer stayed in the squad. And then, like, you know, myself with Jude and my dad were like the Fallschirmjägers. We kind of stayed, but we were all like together. We never really branched apart. There was never like a straggling group off doing their own fucking thing.
Yeah. Yes. Except for me and CJ, who got cut off from everybody at one point yesterday and had our own little 1917 moment.
Yeah.
Jude and I went sniper hunting, and when I got back, like, the cat started to stray a little bit. I had to come back in and group everyone back up.
Yeah, once me and CJ got caught off, it was like after lunchtime or so, and it was when was it after lunchtime? I can't remember.
It probably was, because that's when we started. Yeah. We started picking up loose GIs. Like, we would just see like one GI running in the woods. We're like, all right, let's go get him, and we just cleaned up those woods. Because remember, we had like that whole corner like locked down for such a long time. Like,
yeah,
and you guys were. You finally, towards the end, you like made a push with like your entire force, and that's when it gave us trouble.
Well, so me and CJ got cut off for a long time, and then we finally made our way back up. It was when you guys were in African Village, and we were up by the mosque, and all our guys were on the hill, and you guys were in like a force on force battle, like on the hill itself, actually.
Right.
That's when we were, when like chain of command and organization on our side had kind of disintegrated into nothing. But we had also been steadily losing guys all day long. I mean, we started out with a lot of people, and by the end of the day, it was like, where is everybody?
Yeah, I noticed that.
We had like 10 guys at the end.
Did we lose them at lunch? Or did they? I feel like you had
they were steadily dropping off, it seemed like.
They were, yeah. I really don't want to stop for lunch because it just, it didn't affect, I don't think it affected the overall game, but it just, it's like an unneeded stop. Like, we don't need it.
Yeah. You know? Yep. I mean, hell, our medical staff had a grill and hot dogs with them.
Yeah. You know what's so funny, man? When we fell from the first fight, when we fought at Newtown, a.k.a. Dortmund, and we fell back. We actually ran into their stretcher. So we're like, yo, let's booby-trap their stretcher. So we booby-trapped their stretcher. And then he's like got his hands up. He's like, yo, guys, let's just check it on my stretcher. It's cool. We're like, yeah. Like, we're not fucking with it or anything like that. It's all right, cool. So he's like bullshitting with us. He gives us all like water bottles and stuff. He's like, hey, you guys need some water? You know, you guys got to stay hydrated. Like, so he's like being a nice guy. Meanwhile, we fucking booby-trapped his stretcher. So we all like walk away, and all of a sudden we just hear boom, and we're like, oh, he fucking tripped the booby trap. It's pretty funny.
Dick move.
Yeah.
Dick move.
Yeah, it's pretty funny.
Yeah, when Mike and I got lost, that was like the weirdest thing, because it was like when there was like a giant lull in the fight. So we heard nothing. We're sitting there walking around the middle town, Essen, and there was no noise at all except for those fucking doors. Those two barn doors blowing back and forth.
Where was that?
In Essen.
Which? Oh, building. The church? The church doors?
No, the brown building right next to the church.
Yeah, right next to the church. Those two brown doors that like swing back and forth that you can like kick in.
Right.
And so me and CJ, we had like a little skirmish with one dude where we ran into each other like in the town, and we dropped him and then came around the corner and killed another guy. So now we're like on guard. We're like, okay, there's gotta be more Germans in this town, right? Like, there's like two searching specifically for us. Like, we gotta be on guard. So we're like walking through and like clearing this town. It's absolutely silent. Like, it felt like you guys must have been on like the other side of everything. So it's just absolutely quiet, and these barn doors are just like swinging open, like, and we're like laughing, like we can't even be quiet. We're like laughing because it's so eerie.
Yeah,
like
it was like the rapture came and took everybody but the few Germans we saw on the roof of the mosque.
Yeah. Oh, I guess that was right. That was like right in the beginning of lunch, like right after we came back for lunch.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, because we started in Essen, and that's when, like, Mike and I turned around. Like, I told the guys, I was like, all right, flank up the right side. And next thing I know, everybody flanked up the right side.
Yep.
It was just me, Mike, and Zach left.
Yeah. And then we finally got back to where we were originally and ran into Zach, and Zach was dead. And we were like, okay, are they still here?
Yeah,
we were sending at that point, we had that mosque town lockdown. You know, we had the MG on top of the second story. They couldn't see over the berm. So then I was on the other roof that was a little higher, so I could see over the berm. So I was kind of like directing their fire. Like, they would just shoot up, like, all right, you got to go like 15 degrees to your left, and then just, you know, do like a zigzag spray onto wherever I'm telling you. And then we had guys from the depot, which is, you know, Mulheim, which is really what we fought over for the second part of the day, for the most part. We had them probing into Essen over the berm on that side. And we were just, they were like, yeah, there's guys in there. I'm like, all right, just stay there. Like, lock that down. I know it may get boring, but you're doing a job, you know? So what I love about Zach, and I noticed this yesterday, is, and this is a guy who plays most of our events. He loves them. He gets what we're trying to achieve with our events with like some kind of order, but he like sticks with the main element. Like, you never really see him stray or anything like that.
No, he's good like that.
Yeah, he's good. Yeah. Like I said, I just noticed that yesterday. I was like, oh yeah, he's always like kind of in the mix of things, but like, we don't have to worry about him like running off into the woods, you know?
Like some people.
Yeah. But I don't. I think personally, this might have been the best World War II event that I've done, that I've gone to, let alone I think for Bay that Bay's done. It was definitely the best one.
I think we can, you know, like we're obviously not going to be able to bring it to the level that the Vietnam events are at, like that level of like unit cohesion and like immersiveness. But I think we should start thinking about, you know, focusing some attention on bringing more immersive elements to World War II games. That way we can start to like sort of convince people that maybe that's something that they would be interested in. But even though like it's, I mean, it's so painful because it's always going to be a grab bag of, of impressions.
Yeah.
And it's just hard.
Yeah. It,
I have a question. Was the guy that made the Zulu summer event last year, was he there?
Who's that? The owner, Dave?
I don't know his name. He was like some bearded paratrooper in the summer.
It's probably Dave. Yeah, he's the owner of Zulu, Dave. He was there yesterday.
And he participated?
Yes.
Yep.
He's actually, it's not a paratrooper. It's a, it's like a regular infantry impression he's got.
It's a second Rangers.
Yeah.
So did he have any comments or input on your production?
Oh, dude, he thought we were great. He he really thinks Broken Arrow should take the next step and start doing like off-site venues, you know, like factories and stuff like that. He thinks we're ready for that.
He really wants to see like a 100-person fucking World War II game at Zulu.
I would love that as long as everybody had a goddamn World War II impression, which was hard even yesterday. So yeah, like, yeah. It's hard.
During the last event that was at Zulu, one of the complaints from the German side was that there were too many automatics in play. There should be more bolt actions, more rifles. How was the
The guys with the Kar 98s did get outshot, but it wasn't too bad because we did limit every weapon other than machine guns to semi only. So even me with my like STG, I was shooting semi. Guys with Thompsons had to shoot semi auto. We allowed BARs to run auto, which I felt it wasn't.
Mine couldn't do anything but auto. So.
Yeah. I mean, well, we had to think about it. The guys with the MP40s, they shot in bursts. They couldn't shoot full auto.
Yeah, when me and CJ were doing that thing, I was just like tapping the trigger at this kid in the town, one German. I'm trying the best I can, but the thing's going da 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 da. I'm like, God damn it! And it was just like, oh, just so you know, it's not full auto. It's like within 50 feet. I'm like, yeah, I know, dude. Like, I'm thing doesn't have semi. Like, I'm doing the best I can, man. Like, thing sucks.
Yeah, he probably just didn't know that the BR didn't have. Because I mean, we talked about it. We said if you have a grease gun, doesn't shoot semi. You have to like shoot and burst. It sucks, but it is what it is.
I was like, sorry, bud. And he was like, yeah. And I was like, all right, don't be butthurt, man.
Well, even speaking of that, I really didn't see any cheating or not hit calling. Everyone was pretty honest.
No, me neither.
It was a good solid group.
Yeah, it was good. There was a little bit of butthurt at the end of the day, a little bit of sarcasm, but I think it's just the end of the day. Shit happened.
Yeah.
Actually, yeah, that one kid, like, he like just got up on the ridge and like mowed down like me, CJ, and another kid. And I forget which kid gunned him down, but then like Strasburger just like immediately pulled me and CJ in, and then like we got buddy healed and we're just like, oh, okay. And then he was just like, oh, good to see you guys are like calling your hits or whatever, and like sarcastic. It was like, we just got buddy healed, dude. Like, we all called it. You gunned us all down. There's like no question about that.
I find that people aren't used to buddy heals, so it looks like you are cheating. It does. But here's my thing.
Yeah, I'm not used to it. That makes sense.
Here's my thing. We don't enforce it, and we should. And it makes sense in terms of gameplay and fairness. Is when you get hit, you cannot be buddy healed for 3 minutes. You're supposed to be sitting there for 3 minutes.
That makes sense. Like, you can't, like, that, like, even I feel like when that's happening to me, like, it's nice and all, but, like, you there should be that time buffer for getting buddy. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
We're gonna enforce that for the next event coming up, Baltic Retaliation, which we're gonna talk about in a few minutes. But I really think it's there to, like, at least give some reward to the guy who hit you, you know. Someone brought this up to McKenna for future rules. Buddy heals, you gotta wait 3 minutes. But if you're a medic, you can medic the guy immediately. I just think that may get too confusing, but we may be able to pull that off with Vietnam. And maybe with the group that we had yesterday, I think the guys are somewhat smart enough or swift enough to do it. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I agree to that. I think that sounds
so good. It would be like CJ, there's a three-man squad of CJ, Mike, and me, right? I'm the medic. CJ gets hit. Mike is going to go buddy CJ, but he can't hit for 3 minutes. But I'm like, all right, I'll get him. I can immediately, as the medic, buddy, medic heal CJ. I think that's somewhat, I think medic's got to, okay. Medic's got to have a, go ahead.
Can I add a caveat to this?
Go ahead.
If you get immediately medic healed, then the next time that you get hit, then you're dead. Instead of having the two-hit system.
That's tough to enforce, though, Mike.
It is tough. But, I mean, like, we're already doing the two-hit system with the bandages.
Right. It's like, actually three hits. You have
specific medic bandages, like...
Well, see, this is how I'm looking at it. I'm sorry, John, if you were trying to add something. This is how I kind of looked at it. If you're the medic, you should have a wider understanding of the medic rules anyway. So if everyone who's playing is not a medic, should just assume that it's always going to be a 3 minute bleed out, right? And they don't even have to know there's a special rule for the medics. Maybe we can enforce it that way, where it's like, oh, you're just a regular Joe rifleman. It's always going to be a 3 minute wait period before you can get buddy healed. And then a medic comes along, is like, no, I'm a medic, I can do it. I don't know. I mean, you guys play just as much as me. What do you guys think?
In my opinion, I think the medics are great. You know, in the games I've run, I only really use medics. You know, trying to keep with just, you know, unit cohesion, you know, keeping groups together. You know, medics really do a good job. But I understand keeping guys in the field, you know, when you lose a medic, you know, you really, you know, you lose your ability to stay on the field.
Right.
So the buddy heal thing works well. So I think implementing both of them wouldn't be that hard, you know, especially the crowd you get, the guys really tend to listen, you know, and help the people who don't.
Yeah.
So I think it's a good idea, you know, have medics that'll pick you up instantly, or, you know, you have to wait in a buddy heal. That's all.
Maybe let's try that. I noticed, especially for Vietnam, where we have such set roles, and like guys who are going to be medics at like Operation Cochise this year, they know they're being medics for at least 6 months. So they're like already they already have that mentality. They've been mentally preparing that I'm the medic for this big event. And when guys get hit, you rarely see people buddy healing. We let the medics, like we let the riflemen stay as riflemen, like, and give covering fire. Like say we have a guy, a squad of guys who go online. One guy gets hit in the middle. Those other riflemen are still keeping the suppressing fire, and the medic, the platoon medic in the back, he runs up and treats the guy who's been wounded. So it really isn't that big of a deal. I think buddy heals are almost like extreme cases, especially in the Vietnam events. Obviously, for these one day events that aren't as serious, guys, it's just really intended for guys to stay in the game and keep playing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've never been a fan of the buddy heal. I've always liked to have a designated medic. You know, like I said, unit cohesion should be a big part of the gameplay, and that really tends to it, you know.
Right. And that's go ahead, Mike.
I think I know this ties into like me. You know, I know we talked about this before, but establishing like CCPs at a game. So like that would be a great medic job when we're like, when we're getting into a firefight, to be able to drag back guys to an actual CCP that's not like the, you know, it's not our, like our outpost or whatever. It's just somewhere like, you know, like 30 feet behind the battle where you can drag casualties.
We've, you know what I mean? We did that. You know what we did that in, Mike? We did that at the first event we ever done. The one at Cookies, the NATO-Russia game. We actually had, we had like an aid station set up in the town.
Yeah, we should like, we should have like a mobile aid station.
Like a triage somewhere.
Yeah.
We could do that. We could do that. It's actually written in the rules for Vietnam, for the Vietnam events.
Yeah, it's in the CCP
rules. Yeah, it's in the handbook.
Yeah.
But that's the thing is, those medics got to have, they're the ones that have to have the wider understanding, because they're really enforcing it. They're enforcing the rules. But like I said, I think with the Vietnam stuff, especially for the GIs, the medics are really the only ones doing the healing, because they're like, that's my job. Like, if you're a rifleman, keep shooting, keep, you know, if you're trying to lay down suppressing fire, stay that as a rifleman. Let the medics do their job. I think it was in extreme cases where people will get buddy healed. In fact, I rarely saw people get buddy healed at MacArthur last year.
Yeah, that's true.
It was mostly the medics. So, but yeah, I think for Baltic 3 Retaliation, let's try it. We'll try the 3-minute wait for a buddy heal, instant heal for a medic.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. All right, so anything? Go ahead, CJ.
I was going to say, and by the way, the medics that we had yesterday were pretty awesome. And the way they ran and did their medic, like being medic'd in by those guys, was pretty awesome.
Yeah, that was they were fucking on top of it. I loved it. I hope they get solid Vietnam kids together and come out and be aid dudes.
You got their names, right? No. Oh, it was Paul Brzezinski, I think was one of them. I know who he is. He messaged me. I'll reach out to them.
Because I mean, I know the guys that didn't attend yesterday. So what these guys were doing is, when you would get hit, they'd come over with their sulfur powder, you know, sprinkle their sulfur powder on you and give you friggin' salt pills, which were Smarties, you know, and it just, and they'd bandage you up where you got hit. It was a pretty cool, it was a really cool effect.
It was awesome. I was really impressed. And I never say that ever.
No, you don't.
Yeah, we'll work on them. We'll work on them. So anything else on the rear pocket, guys?
Nope.
All right. All right. So let's move on to the Discord channel. How long have we had this now? Almost 3 months, 2 months, 2 full months. So, Brian, we're going to talk about it a little more. We'll probably talk some point this week or within the next coming weeks. We'll update and tweak the Discord, how it's evolved, and, you know, base what our tweaks are on that. But the first fireside chat we had, I thought, went really well. It was pretty useful. CJ was on it, right, CJ?
Yep.
CJ and McKenna were on. I know Ferrucci was on, but he's not on today. He's not on the podcast today at the work. But it's definitely useful. We'll do it again. We'll do a fireside chat for Baltic Retaliation definitely sometime in the next 2 weeks. But I think for Vietnam, we're definitely going to use it a lot. I honestly want to do a Vietnam fireside chat specifically like in the next month, and we'll talk about starting out and getting people, you know, started out, and I'll record it like a podcast, so it's like a live podcast, and then we can save it for future use. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I like it.
Yeah, that's cool.
I agree.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's kind of like a live Q&A, and we're sending links and stuff like that.
Yeah, that makes sense to me.
Okay, so that's really it about the, I think it's, like I said, it's useful for me. From my point of view, it's been useful. I'm still doing double the work in some cases because I'm posting stuff on the Discord and on Facebook still, since I think some people are just not going to adopt the Discord. So we got to cover all of our bases.
I think more and more people are, I mean, you get trickles in every day.
That is true. What do we, what's our count nowadays? What do we have?
Let's see.
60 people?
75 members.
Wow, that's pretty good, man.
So, I mean, how many, you guys had a planning call for Rur Pocket. How did that go? Like, did that bring in any more people?
Yeah, it did, actually. Not as many people as I would have hoped for. Like, and everyone showed up at a half an hour late, and they actually just caught us, like, randomly bullshitting. We weren't even, like, talking about Rur Pocket. We were just bullshitting. And, like, three or four kids came on, so then we started talking about the Rur Pocket and had answered any questions guys had. I felt the guys that went, they came away with something. You know, it wasn't like a waste of time. So, well, it's going to take time, I think, for people to get into the culture that we're trying to portray on the Discord. So,
right.
Come correct.
Come correct.
Come correct.
Come correct.
Come correct.
Okay, so next segment is going to be Coming Correct with Bay. And we're talking about pantalones.
Pantalones.
Right, so what do you guys want to start with? You want to start with the USGI pantalones options or the Pavin pantalones options?
The Vietnam one is a lot smaller options, probably.
Yeah.
I honestly think the GI options are smaller.
They're both small.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the GI ones are smaller. Fucking third pattern pants or the second pattern pants.
Yeah.
At least the NBA you can wear like tan or black.
Yeah.
There's no other options. Get the proper uniform requirements. Come and correct section over. Fuck you.
Well, we can't do that, so we can't leave it as that. So let's talk about the let's talk about the GIs first. CJ, you have so basic, simple option, easiest option to get is the Rothko stuff that CJ can get at a discount, and he'll dye them. We talked about this with the shirts, right? With the jackets, it's pretty much the same process. Obviously, you're probably going to buy a jacket and pants at the same time. So a place to get pants option are the Rothko Repros, their third pattern ripstop, and CJ will dye them the correct color for you. So that's like hands down the most basic set of pants you can get. Other places you can get pants. Mike and I we have their first patterns, their Poplin first patterns. You can get them from right now. Soldier of Fortune has them. They're really nice. They're really actually really nice pants. The colors, the color is great. Yeah. Pants. They're about, how much were they, Mike? They were about $60.
No, they're less. They're with less. Shipping, they're less.
Yeah. That's a good option. I don't know what guys prefer. We prefer obviously third pattern Poplin, but any of the patterns are okay. But things to avoid obviously are like modern BDUs.
Don't do that.
Don't get modern BDUs. Wear
green.
Yeah,
because it's
doesn't mean you can wear it.
Right. No Ertles for this. No Tiger Stripes. Especially no Tiger Stripes for Cochise.
Yep.
Don't go to like Target and buy some green Wranglers and think they're going to pass because they're not.
They're not at all. And I think this should be time to where we, you know, like at least mention right now how much more we're going to be cracking down this year on refusing entry for not having proper equipment.
Yeah. You know something, Mike? It really wasn't, I think generally the impressions last year were good. Like no one really had, I think I saw one Alice pouch. That was it.
Yeah.
I'm going after facial hair this year. You ain't allowed through the gate.
Yeah. Good. Yeah. No.
Unless you want to get shaved by me, I will shave your face with a straight razor.
So you know what the process should be, right? You got, because remember, John and CJ are manning the gate. They're in charge of the MPs at the gate. Some asshole comes looking like ZZ Top. You're directing them to the base barbershop, which is at the Bamboo Viper, which is manned by Mike. That's the process right there.
Yeah, they got to pull over right there and get out right there, and they don't get their equipment out of the car. They come right to me and get shaved.
We'll handle the car. We'll valet it. Don't worry.
Yeah.
We'll valet it into the bushes down the cliff.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
I'm gonna take a barber lesson so I can get better with my straight razor. I've been practicing on friends. I've been practicing shaving people. I can do that shit, man. I can shave people's faces. I'm looking at YouTube courses and shit.
Yeah, I think some guys would just come with beards to get shaved. Like I know Steve Cardello, he talked about it.
That'd be fun.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just don't piss off Mike and then expect him to shave your face. If you've seen Sweeney Todd, favorite, you know why.
So. Yeah. Sweeney Mike.
Sweeney Mike indeed.
So, let's stop obsessing about shaving for now. Pants for GIs, third pattern Poplins, the ideal preferred option. The Ripstop Rothko repros that CJ can get, message him. He will hook you up. Go to him.
That is the lowest acceptable option.
It is.
Bottom line.
I personally like the Morris Poplins are really good. The Soldier of Fortune Poplin are in stock. Their first patterns. Morris, I don't think really has much in stock right now. I know he's working on it for the season. But yeah, I mean, most guys listening to this, I think, are already good. This is really aimed towards the new FNGs that are just starting out. And what we all say, because we've gone through it, is buy smart, buy once. Like, don't buy the wrong shit and trying to cheap out and buy the wrong shit, and then us tell you no, that's no good, and then you have to spend even more money buying the correct thing. Like, just buy it once and buy it correct. So that's really the purpose of this exercise of coming correct with Bay. So let's move over to the NVA uniform, which really is the tan uniform they wore. Roman, what's your recommendation, buddy?
So, yes, there were green uniforms, but don't bring them here. Like the darker green stuff, that's like late war stuff, like what they got like when they were going into Saigon. That's not our thing. So stay away from green. Who are lucky enough to have a size that Moore's still has in stock, that's your best option. But it's not likely for most people that you're going to find what you need on Moore's. So if you want something really legit, order like today from SoShop, because he needs like a month or two to make the thing and then like a month for you to get it from Russia. So if you're not going to go that long and more expensive route from SoShop, get it from, just get yourself some plain khakis like Dickies or whatever other brand that very plain. You don't want any cuffs. You don't want those folds, whatever they're called.
Pleats.
Very, yeah, no pleats.
No cargo pockets, right?
No cargo pockets. Just the regular two slanted pockets on your front and like one or two pockets on your butt. I got myself a set of Dickies. The fabric is a little bit more rougher. It's more durable. The only things you need to worry about that is to remove the tag that's on the butt, like by the pocket. Just undo that little tag, get it out of there. That little white tag is such an eyesore for me. And if you want to go the extra mile, you add a couple of buttons down to around your ankles and one button on each side. And then you have a little loop that you can like
taper
your ankles, and then you're set. That's what I did. When I outgrew my Moors, I ended up getting myself a set of these khakis while I was waiting for Sew Shop to arrive. And I removed the tag, add a button and a loop around the ankles.
Let me ask you something, Roman. I'm thinking out loud here. Is it worth us buying some buttons and little loops and doing it for people at the field come coaches?
I've got so much other shit I'm worried about doing than to sit down and sew people's pants.
That's why I'm asking you. I'm just thinking out loud here.
There's not going to be any time for that.
I agree. That's why.
You can tie with like twine. If you're tall, it doesn't really work. But you know, if you're in the shorter, you can get pants a little longer and tie them up. Twine.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll cup them over.
I mean, it is something the guys should do before the event as they're getting their gear ready anyway. So, bad idea. I'll take it back.
The thing I mentioned about short, what's funny is the pants we got from Sew Shop, the way they're set up for the ankles, when you do them up the front, like if you try to taper, close the button from the front, they make the pants look short.
They do.
I don't know if that's meant by design. I hate it, and I modified my Sew Shop one so that it closes better on the front, so it's not like above my ankle when I close the tabling. But I think that's really a minor detail. Like, very few, besides me, I don't know who else is going to be looking at their ankles.
What about Viacom?
Very simple loose slacks. Very simple. Like it's, even though it's the 60s over there, they might as well be still wearing 40s fashion.
Just, right. Right.
Loose pants. No goddamn cargo pockets. No freaking SWAT team pants. Don't worry about it being black. This is
the get for Vietcong. Like, you can get like Thai fish pants for that shit on Etsy.
Yeah, you just want like high waisted pants, and then you get like a collared shirt. And if you get like a full foam collar, you can go in and just cut the cuff, and then you know, obviously, like either.
Amazon sells Mandarin collar shirts for like $10, man.
Well, I just went.
That's what it's called.
Or whatever, or the. Goodwill picked up a couple collar shirts, cut them up, and they look legit, you know.
Yeah,
Mandarin collar shirts, man, they're everywhere. You can get them on Amazon. Don't wear your fucking SWAT like Danner Arcadia boots. Get some fucking PLA boots. It's not
this,
hard.
This man. Is the next. That's the next discussion. Is boots.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think Dickies are the best bang for your buck with that. You know.
Yeah, yeah. I really like the look of. The black Dickies pants, the scrubs. They're the scrub pants with like a colored like work shirt. I think that looks cool. It makes you look like a civilian because that's what you're supposed to look like.
Lucky for me, I wear black Dickies like to work, so I just wear all my old ones, and they fit very well, and they look now, and it fits the part.
Go ahead, Roman. What were you saying?
I was saying that's exactly what, if you insist on coming as a Viet Cong and NLF fighter, that's all you are. You are a civilian. You're just a rebel. So it's just civilian kit. don't overthink it. I recommend against the going as NLF Viet Cong unless the story dictates that you are there. Just better to shoot for People's Army.
Yeah, yeah. Though Cochise does call for it. It was a heavy Viet Cong area, even though it was after Tet. It was a lot of insurgency in the Binh Dinh province in 68. But there also was an NVA presence there, so it calls for both. But what, Roman, though, there weren't too many Viet Cong last year, right? John, too, right? There wasn't much Viet Cong.
And
Kyle, I think.
Yeah, me and Kyle, I think, were the only ones with Viet Cong.
Yeah. And I think Kyle was asking questions. I think he's going to go NVA this year, he said.
He's going to NVA. Yeah. I think he's going to have a full NVA group.
That's going to be good, man. We get Roman. We got to start working on those guys. We got to see who's returning and who's new and start recruiting for NVA.
Kyle guy was the one that had an AK-74.
I think Kyle was good. I think
I don't think everybody had a 74. I think everybody had
47. We had one guy who had like black cargo pants and an AK-74.
I don't think that was Kyle. I'm not sure.
He may have had cargo pants, but he definitely didn't have a 74.
Oh, yeah. So there was a guy there who had an AK-74.
Oh. I know an AK-74 was asked about, and Chris reluctantly allowed it, but if it is Kyle,
first look back at the picture.
Yeah, no, I remember I talked to Kyle, and he's like, you guys, this was a great experience. I'm definitely improving my kit for next year. Like he's bought into it. So even if he did, I know he'll come with a better impression this year. It was his first event of any of this kind, so. I actually, Brian, I believe he's on Atlas also.
I'm sorry, who?
Kyle Doucette. I think he's Bald Kyle on Discord.
Oh, yeah.
He's a cool dude.
Yes.
But he's bringing a buddy also who there. He's getting his kit together for it. So yeah, I mean, you... you're gonna have your hands full, Roman, with a few of the new guys. Hopefully we get new guys and everyone who's at MacArthur last year returns.
I always tell my guys as well, like, because the recon roles for AJ and Spring Offensive are so sought after.
Yeah,
I always tell my guys, like, if you go to a non-soft game, and especially one of your events, and you play as NVA. I will put you into a recon role because you understand that it's not, I have a bolt action sniper and I'm wearing a ghillie suit. It's I'm recon.
Right. You're not playing for yourself. Cause that's really what most snipers do. You know,
right.
It's for them. It's for their experience. Not for
the, we've had great experience with our recon guys and I always want to get better. You know, I don't want to plateau and, you know, a lot of the stuff, I mean, you saw with how I treated my recon guys is every year we're evolving. And a lot of that is due to how, from what I've learned at the NOMSOFT games from VC or Pavin.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, think even at Indie Country with CJ and Roman, like we probably didn't talk loud for 2 days. Like it was all whispering for two days. It was great.
Yeah. You know?
Definitely a different experience. Okay, so is that it for Come and Correct? This was an easy discussion because it really matches up with the jacket discussion. There really was. We probably should have lumped jacket and pants together into uniform.
Maybe touch on belts.
Belts. That's a good one too, John. Yeah. So for the GIs, it's really one option. It's the black belt with the brass buckle. It's the black canvas belt with the brass buckle. What's it called? I don't even know what the belt's called. Mike, do you know?
It's just a web belt. It's called the web belt.
Yeah, the web belt, right?
But it's also black buckle, as the black open face buckle as well.
Oh, right. Yes, yes, yes. And what was the Marines were silver? Is that right? The silver buckle? And the Army was brass and the Marines were silver? Or is it the other way around?
Yeah, I believe the Army was brass. I have a bunch of the black, issued black open face buckles if anybody needs it to change out their...
I'd like one.
Hit me up. Yeah, I have a whole box.
You can hold it out on me, Boyle.
Yeah, I'll take one. The brass one's terrible. All
right.
Yeah, mine sucks too.
All right, I'll hook you guys up.
And then for the NVA, there's a lot of different belts out for the NVA, I've noticed. They have that weird cotton one. Go ahead, John.
Chris had a hookup on the NVA belts last year. I think it was like $15 or maybe even less. But they worked really well, and they held up.
Yeah, and they had the buckle, I think, has...
The star on it.
Yeah, North Vietnamese star on it. I have an officer's belt that's like green, and it like kind of held up, but then it just got annoying, and I think I eventually took it off. I gotta adjust it a little bit for the next time I'm in VA.
The buckle is a little long.
Stay away from those brown leather ones because they're not really leather. It's freaking plastic. Like they are terrible at holding like the adjusted length on them.
Like, what, they, like, slide?
Yeah, they will slide out of position. No. It's like actual leather. I mean, it's like maybe it's like some sort of canvas treated with some chemical, and it just feels like rigid plastic.
No. I mean, if you're wearing black pajamas, you don't need a belt, but the NVA uniform, you're supposed to tuck your shirt into your pants, so you should have a belt.
I just use a simple brown civilian belt to hold up my slacks.
Yeah. I mean, I know for the GIs, the belt's probably like five, at most surplus shops, it's like $5, the correct belt. So if you don't come with it, obviously you didn't look for one. That's how I'll take it. If I see you show up with your leather Gap belt for your GI impression, although you didn't go out and look at a surplus shop for the correct belt. All right, so the last topic I want to talk about on this episode is Ragnarokker 3. We kind of gave a sneak... Yeah, we kind of gave a sneak teaser about it. I got talked into doing it again. CJ always was supposed to talk me out of it, but he didn't do a good job.
No, I did a terrible job.
Maybe deep down you want to do it. That's why.
It's fun. People like it.
It is fun.
Yeah, I think ever since we talked about it on that one podcast that I'm not doing it ever again, I've been getting requests to do it again.
Yeah.
So here are my conditions if we're going to do it. The first one is a big one, is that we're sticking to our guns with the authenticity standards that we're setting. So if Operation Cochise Green and Battle of Calm Duck are tier one events, meaning that those standards are like as good as reenactment, they're a little more strict than the other style events we have. This Ragnarokker 3 is going to be a tier one event, meaning we're going to come out with a reasonable impression guide to be the Volkland Defense Force Army. And it's going to be based on gear that everyone has. If you play modern airsoft, you know, pickup game airsoft, you should have this gear. So you should be able to meet it. But this is what it's going to be. There's no ifs, ands, or buts. You're not going to show up with like a completely different uniform and no helmet or whatever, and do whatever you want and think you're going to get away with it. We're sticking with our standards. We got to stick to our guns. You know, the last one we got a lot of pushback and people just didn't get it. And I understand why they didn't get it, because it didn't seem, I don't know. I understand though, like wanting to go and thinking it's,
we're just not doing it in Jersey, and we're going to have a different population, and then they'll get it.
We are. Well, that's the other thing. It's going to be an overnight, which I think will filter out a lot of the guys who aren't going to be as serious about it. So it will be an overnight. It's going to be in October, and it's going to be a GZA. And I think the GZA community likes to do the theme stuff, and they will get into it. That's that. The other big thing is we're only doing one VDF unit. And I think people got confused with the same Volkland Defense Force side had two different units with different uniforms. But if you think about it, like, I don't know why people didn't get, like, all right, the Bergstickers and the Luftbarn, they're both part of the VDF. They just were issued different uniforms. If you look at it, the gear itself was the same.
Yeah, you're not looking at the player perspective. You're looking from an organizer taking inspiration from real world. The people registering are looking from the point of view of, oh, this is an event and there's two sides to register on, and I'm registering on a side that's
right. But Roman, the thing is, the only measure we were able to take was that we had to explain it constantly. Like, I mean, I posted infographics saying, remember who's on your team. The guys in multicam, if you're wearing OD, are still on your team. The guys in Woodland are on your team if you're wearing multicam. Like, how else were we going to do it? So we're getting rid of that confusion. We're doing one unit, one uniform, and CJ requested it be Woodland, since more people... Woodland's easier to get if you don't have it, and he feels that most people should have a Woodland uniform if you play Airsoft.
Plus, multicam burns the skin.
Yeah. So it'll be just one Woodland uniform. I think what did we decide on? It was going to be Luftbarn or Bergstigger. What were we going to do? The paratroopers, right? The Luftbarn. Yeah. So it'll be the Luftbarn wearing Woodland uniform. And they'll be up against a highly motivated Op-4, which the Op-4, if it's the Op-4 I have in mind, it's going to be some fucking good fucking guys. So that's how it's going to be. The event will be same style event where it'll be a player force against the staff Op-4, a dedicated Op-4. My other condition was that I will be on the Op-4 leading it to make sure the mindset remains as Op-4, which I think it got lost a little bit in the last event. So
how do you plan on doing the overnight as far as sleep and game planning, I guess?
Okay, so at GZA, there's that town. I don't know. You know what? Honestly, John, I don't get me wrong. I did think about it. It'll be very similar to our Vietnam events where I think the VDF will have a RON site and they'll defend it, and we'll be probing them as fangs and stuff like that, much like the Viet Cong and the MVA.
Okay.
And GZA has a pretty good feel for it because you can traverse it in the pitch black. So for us, I mean, obviously if it's modern, maybe guys will have nods, which will add a different element to it compared to the Viet Cong and Vietnam stuff. But I just think the overnight aspect will weed out the not so serious guys and maybe appeal to more serious guys who will get the spirit of the event.
Yeah, and the uniform restriction, I mean, though it is as strict as the Vietnam, it isn't as hard to obtain, you know, like CJ said, instead of Woodland, MAD,
right?
Nothing like score, you know? Like,
right, I mean, think about it. Everyone has some cheap helmet, the Ops Corps helmet. Everyone should have that. That's, and we're not even
getting too strict on the color. Like, if you had a green one or a tan one, we don't care. As long as it's an obscure helmet. The plate carrier, same thing. It's, we're not even caring about what kind of plate carrier it is. If it's a green, tan, woodland, or multicam plate carrier, we're fine with it.
Can that be a steel pod? This or isn't
hard. No, it has to be a modern helmet. Modern helmet. So we're allowing the...
Is Mitch still modern?
Yeah, we did allow the Mitch helmets. We even kind of allowed the Pazjid helmet too.
So another thing I could get too is helmets. I could order helmets as well if people need them.
You know, honestly, CJ, I was thinking about this. Since we're doing Lufbarn, what we could do to mask all the different kinds of helmets and colors is we can bring scrim for people. I have plenty of potato sacks that we can cut up and make scrim for the paratroopers.
Yeah, we could do that.
You know, kind of give everyone the same look, which would be kind of cool.
Yeah, that would be. It would be pretty awesome.
And I have tons of fishnet, so we can kind of make a fishnet, put it on top of the helmets, and then scrim it up. We can do that as a kind of like a bonus for the guys showing up.
Yeah, yeah, that'd be awesome.
Yeah, it sounds cool.
Yeah. And so with the player base, yes, that's what we're doing. The fangs are going to be getting retweaked too. Like, they're going to have a little bit more of a uniform as well. I think emulate the, think about it like a Nordic IRA. So I want like guys looking like, you know, berets and balaclavas and shit like that with like tunics.
You're not doing fur pelts anymore?
No, fur pelts are good too. That is, like I said, a Nordic thing. But like I noticed, like the last one, it looked like a rabble of guys. I didn't feel like they were fangs compared to previous events. Like the first
kind of looked like the gay pride parade.
Yeah, like there was too much going on. The fangs from the first event, they actually did a side chat without me, so I didn't know what I was expecting with them. I just told them what they should wear, and they showed up. To me, they looked exactly like I envisioned the fangs, and that's how I want to follow their guideline. And I'm talking about the first one way back in 2015, or 2016, or whatever it was, at Cobra One with Anchor and Star. That's how I want us to be as fangs. So we'll have.
Still doing like tunics, Nordic stuff.
Okay. Yeah, they wore tunics with tiger stripe pants. And they either had a boonie hat or a hood or something like that. We'll sort it out when it gets closer to the event. And I purposely had put it into October, thinking that it gives us like a month to plan after Cochise Green. So if guys want like a different take on the experience that we give you with the Vietnam events, this is a good event to go to. And that was always originally its intention.
So we got to think about throwing in some more like immersive elements and like the camping aspect.
Yes. The other thing is,
yeah, I have some ideas for that I'd love to run by you.
Yeah. No, that's fine. And I want like Mike, like since you're going to be a fang, like in the past, like remember Todd and like Steven, they doubled as like workers sometimes, and they were like, you know, remember that we had the natural resource that was being mined, which is really the main reason why the fangs hate the VDF. So we had like oil drillers that were like taken captive, and Todd and Steven doubled as those guys. You know, so they were fangs, and they would change up, put some construction helmets on. So I really need guys willing to be role players, which a lot of the staff that are going to be fangs are willing to do that. So. But I mean, Mike, you're probably talking about something else. But yeah.
No, well, I was thinking about something similar, but like nighttime. Can I be like a? Can we have some like? I would love to like open up the lore towards like what like the Fang like religion is, towards like a paganistic like sense of like Norse spiritualism, and maybe be like an oracle or something that's like in the town by a campfire with like a little altar.
So interesting. So
you,
Interesting.
I like that. Telling you your future and shit.
You know what's funny, Mike? I made runes for the first one. So when people were walking around, they would just see like a little statue with fucking runes. And I was like, I made up our own like Fang's language with like the characters and stuff. I'm cool with that, man.
Yeah, because there's like the, you can like decrypt it, right? Because it's just
yes.
an alphabet.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Why don't we do some, like, I would love to open up to some like Norse, like pagan spiritualism.
Hey, you already got your werewolf.
Yeah, bro.
Yeah, that's not a bad idea. Let me think about it. I kind of have an idea that would fit the storyline and not be too hokey, in the sense of like why are these soldiers running across this fucking Viking wizard guy? You know, we'll work it in. It's a good idea, actually. It's cool.
Yeah. Viking wizard dude has to like kind of appear partial, but maybe like.
Yeah, like there's some weird church that. Yeah, no, I got it. I have. We can work it. We can work it, Ben.
Yeah. Okay.
It's cool. That's a cool idea. Okay. But no, I want like I said. I think the Fangs should go in thinking about a secondary role. That's not combat, you know, because like think about it, you like we have to get back to the mindset that the Fangs aren't here to win. They're not here to get kills. They're not here
this
to
is
play
the only
game
run where it's a pure op for experience.
Yes, you're the NPCs at a video game. You're the boss at a video game that's there to get killed by every player that comes across them. I mean, not that simple. Like if the players are idiots and like I remember the one
we are Wreck-It Ralph.
The Fangs are Wreck-It Ralph.
The one before last time where me and Penn just held that ridge line with a machine gun.
Yes. Yeah. Or like Roman, you remember the one at Cobra where they just kept like coming at us straight to the front and we just kept on picking them off and then they finally smartened up and wiped us like Mike, like we've like think about it because CJ and I were on the VDF at that point when we kind of like pulled back and then came up with a plan and then like outflanked you guys and kind of broke through, like that's fine. Like if people are not being smart, yeah, obviously make them pay for it. Like I said, it's a great series. Everyone has fun. People ask about, like, I'm telling you, I get more requests about that than anything, really. So, I think we just have to, make it like a tier one event and you have to adhere to the rules this time, just like our Vietnam stuff.
Yeah. Come correct.
Yep. Yep.
Come correct.
All right. Yeah. If we have nothing else to talk about for Ragnarok 3, we'll start talking about that as the time progresses. Obviously, next event for us is Metro Airsoft Preseason Expo, April 18th. We'll do a recap of that next episode. But CJ, let's say goodbye.
Later, ladies and genitals.
Mr. McKenna, say goodbye. Thanks for coming on.
Oh, you're so welcome. Pleasure to be here.
Mr. Johnny Van Ness.
It was a pleasure, man. Take care, guys. Good talking with you.
And Roman Kaminsky.
It was your pleasure. Chicken grease.
All right, Hollywood. Mike O'Donnell, you want to give us a send-off?
Hey, guys. It's Mr. Come Correct. And through these trying times of quarantine, to wash your hands and also to conquer.
All right, guys, take care. Hang on, I hear rustling.
Roman.
Okay, I'm recording now.
And I mean, if you look at Italy, I mean, we all know Ferrucci. We all know how he is. I mean, double that by, you know, a couple million, and now you know why it spread so quick.
Yeah, I mean, think about it. Ferrucci drops sauce on like a handrail. He's licking the handrail because he's going to waste any sauce.
I mean, he's licking the handrail normally. But...
yeah. You're fucked up. One. Chasing rabbits.
Can somebody please come over? I'm thinking of all you nasty old suckle boys. You could help an old man out like me with corona.
If you don't come correct, I'm gonna find you.